Morning by John Forrest. Here on Radio 4 FM, we begin a new book of the week. From the gods of the ancient world to the instruments of 18th century science, every constellation tells a story. Since time began, in cultures around the world, men and women have sought to make sense of the dots of sparkling silver and white scattered across the dark canopy above them. Susanna Hislop introduces the first selection from her book, Stories in the Stars.
We look up. We notice patterns. We try to make sense of them. This is the glory of stargazing for the storyteller. Above us is a blank page in negative, a jet canvas pricked with white dots, and a ragbag of myths, religions, lullabies, and fairy tales with which to join them up. A whole universe of stories ready to steal, which are as unstable as the stars themselves, shining and magical, but soon to explode and reform from the dust and gas of history into new stories.
Corvus, the crow. We are not so different, you and I. Intelligent, curious, destructive. We manufacture tools, play sports, and know our enemies by their faces. We understand that there is more than just the present, so we communicate and plot. Our societies are structured and sprawling, littering waste and disease. We are omnivorous scavengers that all the other animals hate. But is my collective noun for you a murder of men? Do my myths blacken your name? Are you as cunning, malevolent, and worst of all, stupid in our myths as we are in yours? My squawk is so ugly to you that you have invented fanciful legends to explain how I lost the power of song. You tell a story which makes us laugh. That one of your gods, and why on earth do you have so many and why can't you agree about them? Apollo, who you see as my master, if only you understood the irony of that, once sent me off with his chalice to fetch the waters of life. In it I am, of course, stupid and punished, and all this is commemorated by you and your human and erroneous apportioning of the sky. A story you can read in the constellations you call Corvus and Crater that sit on Hydra's back. Let me tell you the real story about the stars. Once upon a crow, there was a good time. When the land was full of flesh to feed on and the soil was free of poison, the sun would last all day and there was no such thing as night. But one day, Great Mother Crow and Great Father Crow had a terrible row. Great Father Crow had eaten the last worm on her plate of skeleton and then refused to stroke her feathers and clean their nest. To punish her husband for abandoning his husbandly duties, Great Mother Crow placed all the world in darkness so that no one could see each other. And the whole crow world was plunged into chaos. Parents stepped on their children's heads, and lovers collided into trees to their deaths. Besieged with grief and regret for what he had done, Great Father Crow tried to make amends. He pecked and pecked at the darkness to free all the light he could from the sky. But as hard as he worked, he could only pierce small holes in the all-enveloping black. Finally, Mother Crow relented. She gave the crows back the sun. But she kept it from them for half of the day to remind husbands always to obey their wives. And this is why you humans have your night.
Cancer, the crab, also known as the asses and the manger. Under the vast darkness of an African night sky, a dung beetle is rolling a ball of dung across the savannah. This teeny brain scarab has sniffed out the most nutritious feces it could find, packed it into a sphere about 40 times its own size, and is now transporting it back to its nest in a startlingly straight line. A friend of his once tried to roll dung in the daytime and was sizzled to death by the heat of the sun when he'd barely set out. Another was ambushed by a rival gang who had seen the unsuspecting creature leaving the swarming dung heap, followed him, and stolen his precious cargo. So this wise scarab is doing it at night. He is journeying through the darkness, as his family has done for centuries, in a way that it took those big-brained human scientists right up until 2013 to understand. He is navigating by the stars, using his spindly back legs to push it along. He is orientating his ball of dung in a long, straight path by the light of the Milky Way. Does he know that 2,000 years ago, ancient Egyptians were fashioning amulets in his likeness and placing them as sacred objects in their royal tombs? Does this humble dung beetle know that there was a time when his forebears were worshipped on a par with the sun god Khafre, who rolled his own precious globe, the sun, across the sky? Does he know that he was seen as a symbol of creation and rebirth? Or that Khafre himself was often depicted as having the very same head as this sacred scarab, whom the Egyptians also honored in the stars as the constellation Scarabaeus? Meanwhile, as this intrepid dung beetle toils across the dust of the savannah, a ragged crab is scuttling across the sand of the ocean floor. Perhaps she knows why today we call this constellation Cancer and not Scarabaeus. Perhaps her grandparents have told her the story again and again, that many moons ago, when life was better and the sea was still an Eden, free from nappies and plastic bags, one of her crustacean ancestors, Kakinos, nipped the great Heracles on the toe as he battled with the many-headed Hydra. Although this intrepid crab was swiftly crushed to death under the hero's foot, he was placed forever in the stars by Heracles' enemy, Hera, in thanks for his small part in her divine battle. You probably feel quite certain that neither of these creatures knows its part in the stories of the sky. But since we humans once thought that it was only seals, birds, and of course ourselves who navigated by the stars, I wouldn't be quite so sure.
Microscopium, the microscope. This is one of the several figures invented by the literal-minded astronomer Nicolas Louis de Lacaille in the 1750s to commemorate the scientific achievement of his age of enlightenment. Microscopium cuts as pedantic a figure in the sky as its creator does in the history books. Like many of the French astronomers' constellations, most of its fifth-magnitude stars are as invisible to the naked eye as an amoeba wriggling on the slide of its earthly counterpart. Since we are already contemplating the hair-splitting of the firmament that this stellar instrument represents, it might be an apt moment to bring up the way in which the sky is officially dissected today. Archaeological findings have revealed that humans seem to have been mapping the stars for as many as 17,300 years. Astronomical cave paintings discovered in Lascaux in southern France are thought to be representations of the Pleiades and the Hyades. It wasn't until 1928 that they got around to agreeing on an official system of how to do so. Originally, constellations were very much just asterisms, that is, figures defined by the shapes they made in the stars, handed down through legend and lore. In AD 150, the ancient Greek astronomer Ptolemy catalogued the 1,000 or so stars then known to exist. The result was his seminal work, which the Arabs later titled the Almagest, and arranged them into 48 constellations in this manner. Subsequent Western astronomers followed his lead, and any new stars discovered, whether by Dutch explorers in the 16th century or Polish, French, or German scientists in the 18th, were always arranged into constellations envisioned as specific patterns in the night sky, however little they actually resembled their eponymous forms. Interestingly, the astronomies of many other cultures, for example, Aboriginal Australians, do not follow this join-the-dots logic. By the 20th century, however, advances in celestial observation had outgrown the mythical system of more innocent days. There were so many stars in the modern sky that there was a need for a clearer system. Moreover, the lines that earlier cartographers had drawn on their atlases to demarcate the different asterisms were haphazard and inconsistent. In 1922, the first General Assembly of the International Astronomical Union adopted the list of the 88 constellations that we use today. 6 years later, the Belgian astronomer Eugène Delporte presented a definitive list of their boundaries to the IAU, and this carving up of the celestial globe has been conformed to ever since. In the most official astronomical depictions of the sky, there are merely IAU boundary lines to map the heavens. The old animals, gods and heroes have disappeared. And even Lacaille's seemingly unimaginative scientific instruments have disappeared into the ether.
Our curiosity about the stars continues to be as much about story as it is about science. John Berger sums it up. Those who first invented and then named the constellations were storytellers. Tracing an imaginary line between a cluster of stars gave them an image and an identity. The stars threaded on that line were like events threaded on a narrative. Imagining the constellations did not, of course, change the stars, nor did it change the black emptiness that surrounds them. What it changed was the way people read the night sky.
Susanna Hislop introduced her book Stories in the Stars. The readers were Coleman Domingo, Noma Dumezweni and Maggie Steed. It was abridged and produced by Jill Waters and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. After the news, it's Woman's Hour, then in an hour, an audio diary.
I'm one of 30 doctors and nurses from across the UK to join the first wave of volunteers to go to Sierra Leone. There's a mixture of nervousness and excitement.
My father and my brother, who was stronger than I, they did not survive. I was thinking, I said, look how strong my father was. He died through this Ebola virus. And look how small I am.
Join me, Dr. John Wright, for 6 weeks to save the world, this morning at 11 on BBC Radio 4.